The Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world, and we try to figure out how we make our world more just and more compassionate. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Well, Fanny, summer's over.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's still hot out.
It's very hot out here in the Northeast. But Labor Day's gone.
Yeah.
So doesn't that mean summer's over?
No, summer's not over. For me, summer's not over until it's cold out, until I have to wear a jacket.
Okay.
Like a leather jacket.
But you don't like wearing jackets.
I don't. That's why, that's the beginning of my depression.
So, but I have
the winter.
But I have to ask you a question. I mean,
yeah.
Can you still wear white, or is it after Labor Day?
Oh, I wear white. I don't care.
But come on. I thought you're not supposed to wear white.
You're not, right. Apparently. But you know what Kim Kardashian once said? That.
Oh, now there's a great right after Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul.
Kim Kardashian.
A reading according to Kim Kardashian.
Yeah. So she is what she is, but she's somewhat respected in the fashion world, right? She makes trends and things like that. And a few years ago, I want to say like 2-3 years ago, she said that she doesn't care if she wears white on Labor Day. It's what she wants to wear, and it's how you feel comfortable wearing it. So I agree with her.
Okay.
I don't agree with her on much,
right.
But that.
You agree with her. Yeah. So you know who I sat next to at a recent dinner that we had, Catholic Charities, for one of our organizations?
Mm-hmm.
I sat next to Norma Kamali.
Really?
Yep. Who apparently does some of the clothes and fashion for Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
So anyway, so...
Was she wearing white that day? Was this before Labor Day?
It was after Labor Day.
Okay.
And she was not wearing white.
Okay.
And I just want to go on and say, okay? Because sometimes famous people get, you know, a reputation,
yeah,
for whatever, and some of it deserved, some of it not deserved. But I just have to tell you that it was an absolute delight. You know, sitting next to her and having a conversation, very incredibly down-to-earth, personable person. We had conversation about a number of topics, and her concern for the workers,
mm-hmm,
who were working in her company was just apparent.
Oh, nice.
Her sense of what was going on in the world and how we could make the world a better place was just so wonderfully kind of refreshing.
Yeah,
so
that's, it was absolutely really nice to know.
Absolutely delightfully. So anyway, so we can wear white after Labor Day.
I am.
All right. Okay. Well, all right. So that's not a bad thing to wear white. But you know there's winter white.
There is winter white.
So what's the difference between summer white and winter white?
I think winter white is more of like a decor thing. I think. Like I've seen it more in like in home goods and like housing, like for decorations and things like that.
Okay, so I think in my mind, mm-hmm, which I'm not sure it's right.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of an off-white. It's not quite like a beach white sand.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, but a little bit toned down.
Is it?
Yeah, that's...
I feel like winter white's like, I think of snow when I think of winter white.
Well, I like snow.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It is pretty.
Yeah.
It is pretty. So anyway, so let's go to our first guest. Our first guest is Jaya Peterson Lent, who is the Deputy Executive Director of Generations United. And we're going to speak about grandparents because this weekend is Grandparents' Day. It's Sunday, September 9th. So we're going to speak about grandparents. Jaya Peterson Lent, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
It's a pleasure to be here, Monsignor. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for taking the time. So you are the Deputy Executive Director of Generations United. So give our listeners just a little bit of a hint of what Generations United is about.
Yes, we're a national nonprofit that focuses on issues that connect the generations and looks at ways to bring together older and younger people. And we are actually home to the National Center on Grand Families, which is the name we affectionately give to families where grandparents and other relatives are raising their children.
I thought you meant it was just big families. The grand families.
Well, we think they're grand, okay. Certainly. Yeah.
Okay. So how did you get kind of involved with the organization, this type of work? I know that you are a social worker. How'd you kind of begin to move in this direction of focusing on grandparents?
Sure. Well, early in my career, I went into child welfare and did child abuse and neglect investigations and found that when families were struggling and parents were not able to care for their children, that there were often grandparents or other relatives that would step in, but found that they did not get the same types of supports and services that traditional foster parents would receive when they were stepping in to care for the children. And it felt unjust to me, and it was very clear that the children would thrive with relatives rather than non-relatives when that was an option for them. And it seemed to me we should be doing a better job supporting those families. So after graduate school, I decided to come to Washington and see what we could do about it, and found Generations United, and that is one of our primary focuses here.
So if, you know, you've been doing this for a few years, I mean, right now, the world that we live in is not a world where, you know, 75 years ago, you might have had the image of a family. You know, they talk about traditionally two kids, a boy, a girl, a mom, dad, you know, living in a three-bedroom house in the suburb. You know, that's not the world of 2018. That's not the world that we currently live in, correct?
Certainly families take all shapes and forms nowadays, and we can see that families can thrive in all shapes and forms. Children love their parents and really ultimately most often want to be with their parents. But when their parents cannot provide care for them, we really look to other relatives that step in and play that parenting role. We know children do better with relatives versus non-relatives when there are relatives that are there for them and are supported to meet their needs. And so we focus on ways that we can support those families to help the children and caregivers thrive.
So, Jaya, if we go back, like, I don't know, 100 years, 75 years or stuff like that, I mean, you hear a lot of stories, you know, probably when you hear those stories, many of them are true, maybe some of them aren't. But it would almost, you hear a lot of stories about, you know, my mom couldn't raise me, so she sent me off to live with my aunt. Or, you know, there was a problem in the family, maybe there was drinking or something like that, and the father couldn't be there, and so, you know, again, the grandmother kind of stepped in and, you know, and did that. I mean, I can even talk for my own parents. My father, and he would have been born in 1918, so he would have been growing up in the 30s or the 20s, 30s. I know that he was raised primarily by his grandmother. And it kind of, you know, things like that were not uncommon. You know, I'm not saying they happened all the time, were not uncommon. And it was just kind of a, you know, agreement that families made to do it. And I assume a lot of that still goes on. But what kind of changed where kind of it moved from being maybe, you know, an informal way that families kind of dealt with a situation to one where it got a little bit more structured, where it got more programmatic, where there began to be financial issues, there was child welfare. What was kind of the change that made that change?
Sure. Well, certainly grand families and relatives caring for children has been going on for decades and even centuries. What we've seen in terms of changes is the reasons in some cases are similar and in other cases have changed for for grandparents raising grandchildren. And I think society has changed in terms of some more formalized and legal issues related to raising children. You know, when you enroll a child in school, you need to show that you have legal custody of that child if you're not the parent of the child, for example. So there's some specifics related to the way we formalize enrolling and providing for the needs of families. And I think issues are more complex in some ways. Certainly we've seen a rise in substance use issues and the challenges related to substance use issues in families, particularly in the last 5 years or so, that have raised the need for supporting these families that often are raising children that have been impacted by trauma in a different way than we have seen before.
You know, again, to give our listeners a little bit of sense of things, I just get the impression that, you know, over the past decade or even more, that there are kind of an increasing number of children who might be being raised by their grandparents. Is that increasing?
Yes, so we have seen that in recent years, the number of children being raised by grandparents or other relatives is increasing, and certainly the child welfare system is increasingly looking to grandparents and other relatives to care for children when their parents can't. And in fact, if you look from 2008 to 2016, there's been an 8% increase in the number of children that are raised by relatives in the formal foster care system. And that's happening both because the foster care system is recognizing that when you support relatives to raise children, that they have better behavioral, mental health, and other outcomes. But also there's an increasing need for foster parents because more children are entering the foster care system again. The numbers had been going down for a significant amount of time, and then around 2013, those numbers started to increase again.
Now, that's interesting. We're speaking with Jaya Peterson-Lent, who is a social worker, who is the deputy executive director of Generations United. And we're speaking a little bit about grand families, grandparents, and we're speaking about, you know, how kids are raised so that they can kind of grow to their full potential. So it's interesting, Jaya, that you mentioned that, because I don't know if New York is a little bit of an outlier, but we've experienced in New York, you know, a significant decrease in the number of kids who are entering the foster care system compared with, many years ago. And so it's now really a fraction of what it would have been, let's say, in the 90s. Is that different than the national trends?
Certainly, we've seen a national trend that there was a decrease in the number of children entering foster care for many years. But then around 2013, we saw an increase again. There is some variation by state and locality, but on the whole, we're seeing the numbers jump up. And in different pockets of the country, we're seeing experts attribute the significant jump to the opioid crisis. It certainly varies by location, but there's really been an increase since 2013 nationally.
So again, going back to the question I kind of phrased at the beginning, you know, and you mentioned a few things, you know, but you know, if the family can work it out, why does the child welfare system get involved rather than just kind of, you know, having the aunt take care of the or the grandma take care of the kids? Wouldn't that be a little bit less formal and maybe, you know, less bureaucratic?
In many, many cases, in fact, the majority of cases, the child welfare system is not involved. So
okay.
When we look at the number of children being raised by grandparents and other relatives, for every one child that is raised in foster care by a relative, there are actually 19 children being raised outside of the foster care system by a grandparent or another relative. And in many cases, It may be the preference of that relative to raise the child outside of the foster care system. The advantage of that, of course, would be that there's not, the involvement in the child welfare system, which could be to many families scary, and not wanting the intrusiveness of unfamiliar coming in to your home and asking questions about how the children are raised. But the advantage, of course, for families that need it is there is some of that formalized structure for the families if there are some real challenges between navigating the relationship between the birth parent and the child and the grandparent. There can be that legal structure in place. And in addition to that, there is financial and other services and supports that are available through the formal system that aren't available outside the system. So for some families, those additional supports, services, financial help may actually be critical to their ability to provide for the needs for the children.
Jari, thank you for saying that, because I didn't have any idea about, you know, what the proportions are. And what you're kind of basically saying is that, you know, there are whole lots of kids who are being raised by relatives, grandparents included, and, you know, maybe 5% or so are who are being raised by other family members are doing it through a foster care system. And that's, you know, to me, that makes a lot of sense, because it's not that one size fits all. Sometimes that is a better fit, and sometimes it's not a good fit. And so there's a variety of ways that it can be structured.
That's right. And what we just really want to emphasize for families is that there's a higher level of supports and services and financial help for those families raising inside the formal system. But there are also different levels of supports for families outside the system. So it may be that some level needs some counseling, some family counseling. The child has been through trauma. They were separated from their parents. The grandparent wasn't expecting to care for the child. For them, they may need some family counseling or to be connected to a support group. For another family, they might need a break once a week to be connected to some respite care so that somebody who they trust is able to provide a couple of hours of relief to the grandparents so that they can go and do their grocery shopping without the young child with them, or just take a rest, take a nap. So what families need varies from family to family, but we want to make sure that all families are aware of what's available in their community. And there are programs that are developing more and more across the country called Kinship Navigator programs. And what they are is a warm line or a help desk that grandparents, other relatives that step into this role can call, and there's a knowledgeable person on the other end of the line that gets their information, does an assessment of their family, and can say, here's your options available. You know, there's a support group in your community, or here's a place that you can go if you do need to access some benefits. Here's a family counselor, a full range of resources so that they can be aware of what their options are in their community.
So that strikes me as really, really great. And many of those services can be accessed even if a grandparent isn't formally part of kind of a system. They're kind of available by just kind of calling and getting those services?
Yes, in some parts of the country. And so in New York, New York is fortunate to have a New York Kinship Navigator program. And if you certainly search that in a Google search, you'll find the New York Kinship Navigator and the number to call to get connected with information about what may be available locally in that state.
Just for a little bit of my own curiosity, if the kinship for a grandparent does go through the formal child welfare system, is there as much kind of emphasis or pressure that it be for short term rather than long term as there would be in ordinary foster care?
When a child enters the foster care system with relatives, they should be looking both at the possibility of reuniting the parent with the child, but simultaneously be considering permanency for that child if they cannot be reunited. I think historically it hasn't always worked that way, but really best practice would look at planning for both potential routes, be working at reuniting the child with the parent, but if that isn't possible, a path to permanent permanency with that grandparent or other relative as their parental figure.
Jaya, that would be exactly the same as any kid who comes into the foster care system.
That's right.
Yes.
And that absolutely, that certainly when we can return children to their birth parents, we want for that to happen. We need to provide support to explore that as a possibility. But if that isn't the case, we want another permanent relationship for that child, a permanent caregiver. And when it can be a relative, we should support that relative and make that the permanent relationship.
So, Jaya, in terms of what you've described, is a situation where sometimes relatives, grandparents, are the best ones to provide for the kids. What are some of the things we maybe should be doing as a society from a policy perspective to kind of enable that to happen better or more effectively? Are there things on the agenda of Generations United to kind of help us to foster this situation?
Yes, so there have been some exciting developments recently on that front. Actually, in 2018, Congress passed two pieces of legislation that show significant promise.
That must have been the only thing they passed.
You don't always hear about everything that happens. So these certainly were pieces of legislation that passed under the radar. The first is called the Family First Prevention Services Act, and that is a piece of child welfare reform. And essentially, that reform recognizes two key things. One is it recognizes that children really do best in families. So whenever possible, we should be supporting families to care for children.
Isn't it ironic that it takes us a long time to figure out what the human race has figured out for about millennium?
Exactly.
Right.
Couldn't have said it better.
Right.
So it recognizes that we need to be supporting families for children instead of placing them in group care or institutions when it's not appropriate or helpful for the children. So it reduces federal support for congregate care that is not treatment-oriented, short-term, and appropriate, with a few exceptions. And then it invests those dollars instead in prevention to help support children to keep with families or other relatives if they can't remain with their birth parents. So that is the second piece, that right now the way the child welfare system, federal funding for the child welfare system flows previous to the passage of Family First, really it's difficult for families to get support until the children enter the child welfare system. So until the tragedy has happened, they come into foster care, then federal support for services flows. But very little is available for prevention services to help the family, to help the parent who's struggling with substance use or with a mental health issue. And anytime you talk to a child who has an alumni of the foster care system and say, what could we have done better? We heard over and over again, I wish you had helped my mom. I wish you had helped my dad or my grandmother so that they could be the ones that continue to provide for me. So what Family First does is it actually allows states to draw down some of those federal dollars previously used exclusively for foster care to provide proven prevention services in the area of substance use prevention and treatment, mental health, and in-home parent skill-based supports.
So that was that the two pieces of legislation that passed?
There's two aspects of the Family
okay.
First Act. The
right.
second piece is the Supporting Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Act. And that really focuses more specifically on these grand families, and it creates a federal advisory council that looks at what are the best practices across the country for serving these families, where are the gaps in services, and puts together a report to Congress that highlights those. And in addition to that, a central source of information on federal resources that are available to help those families. And there'll be a process for public input when they put together that report and those recommendations.
So, Jaya, I want to thank you for taking the time time to be with us. Certainly, you've made me far more knowledgeable, and hopefully you've made our listeners far more knowledgeable about, you know, the current way that children are being raised, and the fact that, you know, when the kind of the traditional family isn't working for whatever variety of reasons, that oftentimes a kin can step in, whether informally and in kind of a interpersonal way or through the child welfare system, there are options that can help kids to grow and to thrive, even when things are not exactly the way they should be, when something goes wrong for whatever reason. So I just want to say thank you for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Jaya Peterson-Lent, who is the Deputy Executive Director of Generations United. And we're talking about grand families, families that are more than just maybe mother, father, and grandparents and other relatives who do that. So we're celebrating on Sunday, September 9th, Grandparents Day. So we wanted to kind of highlight grandparents and say a word of thanks and ask a blessing on those grandparents who are taking the responsibility for raising their grandchildren. So let's take a break. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. I guess we have to go. I could listen to Eric Clapton's Holy Mother for the whole song, but I guess we got to say welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. So we gave you a little preview because a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about Mary because it is Mary's birthday. Saturday, September 8th. So today is Mary's birthday. Now, I don't want to say anything to downplay that or anything that would would overshadow that. But Fanny, you know, there was another birthday this week too. You know whose birthday was also this week?
I do know whose birthday.
And who is that?
Beyonce.
Yay! So, but you know why it's appropriate?
Why?
Well, the Queen of Heaven.
Uh-huh.
And the Queen of Earth.
Okay, I guess.
So we have two queens having their birthday in the same week.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess it's pretty cool, yeah.
I see you're not impressed.
No. I'm not.
Yeah, but you got impressed by some dude who was hanging out there.
Robert Lowe.
Who's he?
You know, he's an actor, but the thing is that I grew up watching him, like Saint Elmo's Fire is one of my favorite movies. So I saw Robert Lowe and I'm like, oh my God, you know, it was a big deal. Yeah. I texted my sister, you know.
Yeah. When's his birthday? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. So, all right. So
I have no idea. He's a lot older than I am though. So.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, that's all right. So Beyonce is a lot younger than I am and Mary's a lot older than all of
us,
right?
That's true.
She began like over 2,000 years ago, right? She must have. So let's figure this out.
Okay.
Let's figure that out. We'll do it in the next segment, but let's figure out. So how old was Mary? Like they said, she was kind of like a teenager.
Right.
Still when,
15-ish?
Yeah, 15. There? Well, that sounds good. 15-ish.
Okay.
So she'd now be how old?
Oh, my goodness. Well.
2032.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay.
Well, 33, something like that, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So she'd be real old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She looks great.
She does. She
According to the apparitions, she looks great. That's She's still so pretty.
All right. So we'll get back to that a little bit later on.
Okay.
And just a little tease for you people. We're going to talk about Mary and the Quran. Because Mary's got a pretty important place in the Quran. I bet you didn't know that.
I had no idea.
And I didn't either until a little while ago. Tom told us. Tom's one of the smart people there. He knows all this trivia stuff about everything. So anyway, we got some news going on, okay? So, you know, we still got a crisis of homelessness in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So what's Catholic Charities out in California doing?
Catholic Charities of Santa Clara has partnered with the local community or the local county to launch a sharing housing program connecting renters with housing providers amid California's high housing costs. So Lindsay Caldwell, the Director of Emergency Programs and Housing Services for Catholic Charities there, said, We are incredibly excited to be partnering alongside the County of Santa Clara for this much needed housing resource of our community. I believe the housing sharing program is going to be a great access and truly assist those in need of housing here. So the Board of Advisors for Santa Clara County approved $1.5 million contract in April 3rd. The program officially opened August 20th. The contract money will be used to launch the program over the next two and a half years. Catholic Charities aims to match 100 households annually, connecting renters to house providers as well as renters with other renters. So according to the rental website Rent Cafe, Santa Clara County's average rent is over $2,700 a month. The average studio apartment costs $1,900 a month, and a three-bedroom rental is more than $3,400 a month.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
So I'll tell you a little secret.
Yeah.
A little secret is that Santa Clara County is one of the very few places in the country
mm-hmm.
where the rent is higher than New York, where housing costs
really?
are greater than New York. But I'll also tell you another little connection going back, and when you're old and decrepit like me. So that program
mm-hmm.
that you're talking about now, which they just kind of develop in a new way,
right?
I learned about that program before you were born.
Really?
I learned about that program in 1984 or 85.
That was the year I was born.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I learned about it then because our housing people in New York
mm-hmm.
invited somebody who was running that program to come to New York to talk to us about it, how we might create a little bit different then. It was basically apartment sharing then.
Okay.
Where they would hook up people you know, who had an extra room or so that they could share because housing costs were so much.
So, high. Okay.
So that program goes back a long, long time.
Yeah.
And those are hard programs to run because, I mean, we all know that sometimes when we live with our own families, we don't always get along.
Yeah.
But they're your own family and you kind of got
to
figure out how you do it. But imagine it's a stranger, you know, and you kind of doesn't work out then it gets a little bit difficult. So that's a program that goes back a long, long time.
Yeah.
So tell us a good news story. Tell us a good news story.
Okay.
About a celebrity who wasn't a diva.
Okay. So, I mean, I think I've spoken about Jimmy Fallon before. I really
like him?
Jimmy Fallon. Yeah.
And Jimmy Fallon, Robin Lowell, etc. I'll take Beyonce over both of them.
Okay. So recently, Jimmy Fallon picked up a tab of $1,100, over $1,100, for four fellow diners at a Hampton restaurant. So the two couples were apparently debating.
Hey, $1,100 for four people?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, it's in the Hamptons, so maybe it was a fancy, fancy restaurant.
Wow. That's $250 a pop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay,
so drinks, maybe wine, things like that.
All right.
Yeah. So the two couples were apparently debating over whether or not to approach Jimmy Fallon. He was actually dining with his wife. They decided not to. And Jimmy Fallon actually noticed that they were kind of talking about it back and forth. And he said, "I appreciate the fact that you gave us privacy and I wanted to thank you for that. And I wanted to do something nice for you and paid for their $1,100 meal."
That's pretty neat.
It is pretty neat.
I like that.
I would have gone up to him.
Well, so here's what I would have done, Fanny.
Yeah.
If I knew he was going to pick up the tab, I would have tripped you. So you didn't go up to him and he would have paid for the bill.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right. So that's that. So so let's get a little serious because we got a little bit of a marketing issue that we got right now. We've talked about this in the past. We've talked about the fact that how do sports people, you know, show their political opinions or their moral opinions about things. So what's going on with Colin Kaepernick?
So Nike featured former 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick in its 30th anniversary Just Do It campaign. The text under his image, it's a face of him in black and white. And under the image, it says, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything." So Nike's an official sponsor of the NFL, and Kaepernick remains unsigned since he started kneeling during the national anthem as in a protest in 2016. But this, I mean, Nike's always been a little bit controversial in their ads. So it's nothing new of Nike, but now people are burning their sneakers. They're really, really upset about this ad. I think it's a cool ad, though.
So tell me, So refresh my memory.
Yeah.
What have they been controversial about in the past?
For Nike, they always do things like this. I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember, but they're always, you know, kind of pushing the envelope and things like that. But this one has been, I think, one of the biggest because they do have a sponsorship program with the NFL. So they have direct connection this time.
See, I think this is all, I like this. I think it's all very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And because I like the fact that people have really different opinions, strong opinions about it. And from my point of view, you want to burn your own sneakers that you spent whatever you spent on? Hey, be my guest.
Yeah.
Just, you know, make sure you got a can of water nearby. Don't let it. You want to burn your sneakers? Hey, be free to do that.
Right.
And I think that's great. And I think that Nike, and I would say this from my kind of perspective, is taking a chance on this because there are a lot of people who are pretty negative on what was going on. That they take it. I mean, I do think this is what is really a good part of the United States. Now, let me add a little bit of my own perspective on this. My perspective is, and I heard a talk on the radio previous in the past week or so, where we now seem to always get outraged.
Yeah.
When something happens, oh, it's the worst thing ever. How could you do it? Blah, 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 blah. Well, maybe it's something that's not so good. But maybe it's not the worst thing ever that happened. And okay, it happened and, you know, we move on. So, you know, maybe you disagree with taking a knee to talk about racial injustice. You talk about violence in communities during the national anthem. Okay. And maybe you think that's disrespectful. Okay. I think that's a legitimate opinion to say, hey, I don't like it, stuff like that. But, you know, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And it's a nice way to kind of get a controversial topic being talked about. So I kind of like the fact that we get some of these in a place where it's not just an academic discussion, but I still think we got to be civil about how we disagree with each other.
Yeah.
So anyway, one more thing and then we'll take a break. And then we're going to talk about Mary in the final segment because it's her birthday, along with Beyonce's birthday. But we're not going to talk so much about Beyonce. I understand Mary is far more important than Beyonce. I get it. But I just want to make sure people don't forget.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because, you know, the forgotten people, you can't just let them get forgotten like Beyonce, right?
Yeah.
You have
of
to
course.
Make sure that people remember.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so tell me about what time we're getting up for school now.
So, I mean, I remember getting up pretty early because I wanted to get breakfast.
Okay.
My school had these really good chocolate chip muffins.
Ah.
And you had to get there early because then they were gone and they had to be warm. My homeroom started at 8:15.
Where'd you go to school?
Primus Catholic High School.
Okay.
Paladins. That was our mascot. So California lawmakers passed a bill that bans middle schools and high schools from starting class before 8:30. So supporters say that teens do better in school and have lower rates of depression when they get more sleep. Opponents say starting later will make it tougher working parents and impact after school activities. The governor there, Jerry Brown, still hasn't signed off on it yet. So they're starting school regular time for now, but I don't know. We'll see.
So what do you think?
I mean, 8:30, I think 8:30, 8 o'clock, it's still early. It's all early to me. I'm not a morning person.
But go to bed a little earlier if you want.
Yeah, but you see, that's the thing, because I thought about that.
Right.
But kids are always on Instagram. They're always on their phones. They're not going to go to bed early. If you push it back to after 8:30, then that means that they get to be on their phone more at night.
Right. So I don't know about this.
I think it's not a big deal.
All right. I think you're right.
Not
a big deal.
Yeah.
All right. So let's take a break. This is Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. When we come back, we're going to speak about Mary because it's her birthday. And we're going to speak about a lot of different things about Mary. Interesting, the names, where she shows up, and stuff like that. So we're going to have a little conversation about Mary on Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
your baby boy would someday walk on water.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So, this is Mary's birthday, Saturday, September 8th. And interestingly, why is she born? Why do we set the date of September 8th as her birthday? Fanny?
Well, isn't it because the Immaculate Conception was 9 months before?
Exactly. Exactly.
I thought that was a trick question.
No, it wasn't a trick question. But again, you know, for our listeners, when we're dealing with ancient dates, we, you know, it's hard to be precise as to what exactly the dates were when they happened. You can do some historical looking at it. So oftentimes when we celebrate the date that we're going to celebrate them on our church calendar, when do we celebrate the feast, the mass for it, we kind of try to do it in a way which symbolically makes some sense. And so because we celebrate Mary being conceived on December 8th, we then go 9 months later and we celebrate her birthday on September 8th. Now, this is an easy one, Fanny.
I'm scared.
No, it's real, real easy. So what's the other thing that we do, the other birth, that is the same?
Jesus's.
Okay.
So Christmas.
And?
And then, well, after, before that, 9 months before his conception.
Which is?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yes, you do. What's the feast? Come on. What's the feast?
Oh my goodness. The Annunciation? No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Exactly. Exactly. Boy,
so
oh,
funny.
Boy. Oh, boy.
I just get so nervous because I think they're trick questions.
They're not trick questions. So the trick questions are, so here's a trick question.
Mm-hmm.
So the name Mary shows up in a lot of different languages, right?
Yes.
So we all know some of them, right? So what's the name for Mary in Spanish?
Maria.
Okay, and what's the name for Mary in Hebrew or Aramaic?
Miriam.
Okay, and what's the name for Mary in, one of the names for Mary in German?
German is Ria.
Hey.
Which is really cool. I really
like that. You
like
that one?
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
All right. Well, you don't have a middle name, right?
I don't.
So maybe you could take that.
Yeah, I'll take Rhea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. I'm going to tell my mom.
Okay, you could do that. But you got to see how they go together. Right?
Fanny Rhea. I sound like a celebrity. Fanny Rhea. Like a singer or something? No?
Yeah, but make sure you say it properly, okay?
Okay.
A little slurring could get you in trouble. Okay. But anyway, so, but you know what I want to talk about a little bit with Mary? Is tell us a little bit about the fact, which I only learned, is Mary has a pretty high place in the Quran, right?
Yeah, I had no idea. And Tom actually brought that up. Apparently, she's mentioned over 34 times in the Quran.
Wow.
Yeah, I had no idea.
And what are some of the things they say about Mary in the
Quran?
Well,
She's held at a high place, which I thought was interesting because I looked up also Muhammad's mother.
Right.
And she wasn't so
not such a high place.
Which,
so what's Muhammad's mom's name?
Her name is Amina okay. Bint Wahb.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that name.
It is a nice name, Amina.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what was Jesus' mom's name?
Mary.
No.
Jesus' mom.
I just kind of told you.
Did you?
Yeah, Miriam.
Oh, Miriam.
Miriam.
Oh.
Come on. Come on. You know, I may get this wrong because my Hebrew isn't that good.
Okay.
My Hebrew is awful. I don't have any. But she is Miriam.
Mm-hmm.
Miriam Beth Joachim.
Joachim.
Yeah. Miriam,
mm-hmm.
daughter of Joachim.
Oh.
Yeah.
Beth means daughter. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Beth Israel.
Right.
Is daughter of Israel. Ben
right.
is son.
Son, okay.
I think. So listeners, look it up.
Google
you all got Google, but
yeah.
I'm pretty sure Beth is daughter,
yeah,
and Ben is son. So mm-hmm. it's Jesus,
Ben,
Miriam, and Joseph. So
oh.
anyway, so what else they got to say about Mary?
So I think it was interesting because the Annunciation is mentioned. Everything is, you know, in there. Jesus's death is not, they don't believe that he was crucified. So they take bits and pieces of what we know as Catholics or believe as Catholics. But then there are things that they just exclude and just don't.
Well, let's talk about Mary. What do they say about Mary?
So they talk about the Annunciation, which, right, you know, it's one of the most important parts. In Surah 3, it says
which is basically a chapter.
Yes,
right?
It's a chapter.
Okay.
The angel says, "O Mary, truly God has chosen thee and purified thee, and has chosen thee above the women of the world. O Mary, be devoutly obedient to the Lord, prostrate and bow down, and those that bow." So it's, you know, when the angel comes to Mary, it's not word for word from what we know, but...
You've read the Hebrew.
No.
So? And what does Mary say?
Then Mary says... she said, so once he announces, yeah, once the angel announces, you know, when Jesus is coming or whatnot, then she says, "My Lord, how shall I have a child with no human, while no human has touched me?" And then the angel says, "Thus God created whatsoever he will. When he decrees a thing, he only has to say it."
So it's, so Fanny, I kidded you a little bit,
mm-hmm,
but let me tell you, when you're looking at ancient texts,
yeah,
there is nobody who's not going to mistake that,
yeah,
for the Annunciation, yep, in Luke's gospel.
Right.
Granted, not word for word,
yeah,
but that is exactly, so there is it is intriguing. And I just wonder, and I will get a little maybe political for, mm-hmm, a moment, is I'm just wondering why we don't use Mary as kind of a bridge to try to get some dialogue with Islams, because in far too many parts of the world, there is this conflict.
Yeah.
There's persecution, there's tension, there's distrust, there's hate. And quite frankly, I think if we're honest, there are Christians who hate Muslims just because they're Muslims, and Muslims who hate Christians because of that. I think we can't sugarcoat it. And, mm-hmm, and but here we do, together in our sacred books, mm-hmm, we kind of have parallel considerations of Mary. And, you know, maybe we should kind of try to hold up Mary as, you know, Our Lady of Reconciliation, Our Lady of whatever, to try to make things better. I think, you know, I think that's a really, really thing to consider. So, Fanny, just tell me, which is your favorite favorite apparition of Mary?
You would think that because I'm Dominican, it would be Altagracia.
Right.
But it's not.
Okay. You're going to get disowned.
It's Guadalupe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
Mostly because of how miraculous the tilma is.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, acid.
Some of our listeners might not know what the tilma is.
Oh, so I should give a background.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll just do it off the top of my head.
Okay.
Because I know it, and I, you know. So she appeared to Saint Juan Diego in 1531. And kept asking him to...
That was even before I was born.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. She kept asking Juan Diego, who was a very poor, humble Mexican boy. She asked him to go to the bishop so that they can build a church. And Juan Diego went twice. The bishop said no. And he told Juan Diego that he needed proof. So he went back to Mary. I wish I could just go back to Mary, like, "Hey, Mary."
Right.
But anyway, so Mary had him pick roses from a garden near him. And he put it on his tilma, which is basically a cloth that he had on. And once he went...
Kind of like an apron?
Kind of like an apron, yeah.
Okay.
So he went back to the bishop, and once he laid out his cloth, the roses fell on the floor, and Mary appeared on the tilma. So this cloth has been in the basilica in Mexico City since then. And it's, you know, I believe the church even burnt down. There was acid thrown on it, et cetera, et cetera. And the cloth is still intact.
The same cloth is still there.
The same cloth, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Apparently. I mean, I want to believe it.
Okay. Have you ever seen it?
I don't believe it. No, I haven't.
I saw it.
Did you?
Yeah, I was in there, I don't know, about 10, 15 years ago. So I did see it. It's impressive.
Yeah.
It's a really, it is an impressive thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, happy birthday, Mary, because Mary has an incredible role in our history, and one of the things that is so impressive to me about Mary is the number of people whose spirituality and devotion that they're drawn so much closer to God because of going through Mary. Now, again, sometimes people go a little bit overboard and they go through things, but you know, one of the sayings is to Jesus through Mary, and a lot of people find that to be very good. So, happy birthday, Mary. Thank you for being with us on Just Love. Join us again next week. Just do it. Love God, your neighbor, yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us again on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.